everyone, and welcome to the second episode of MIFA's Navigating the Course to College podcast. My name is Jonathan Hughes. I'm the Associate Director of College Planning and Education at MIFA, which essentially means that I help Massachusetts families and families all over to plan, save, and pay for college. And with me, as always, is Jonathan Sparling. Jonathan?
Yes. Hi, everyone. Jonathan Sparling here, Associate Director of College Planning and Education at MIFA. I work very closely, like Jonathan does, with community partners, helping talk about college planning, saving, and financing. I also work very closely with colleges throughout the Commonwealth and across the country to make sure that they are well aware of everything that everything MIFA has to offer.
Yeah, this is exciting. This is our second podcast episode, and today we're going to be talking about appealing your financial aid award, which is a very timely topic, of course, and relevant in any year, but in this year in particular, given the COVID-19 pandemic, it's especially relevant. We hosted a webinar, which we'll talk about later on, that really in the attendance showed really that a lot of parents are concerned with this and are going to be going through this appeals process. So we'll talk about how they can do that and what's the best way and when families should be looking to appeal their financial aid award. But before that, I want to kick it over to Jonathan because there's been some news since we last spoke about college plans and how colleges are looking to adapt to the COVID-19 landscape for the upcoming year. So Jonathan, what happened since the last time we spoke?
Sure. So thanks, Jonathan. Yeah, it's definitely the news is coming in rapidly. We are hearing through kind of the national media, as well as just the conversations that we have with, the college folks in Massachusetts. I guess one of the big ones is that we are hearing, now that the May 1st deadline has passed, and most of the class of 2020 has made the decision, we're starting to hear more from colleges about their plans for the fall. And as you can imagine, colleges are considering all options, including shifting to online classes for the start of fall, moving to modular style classes. Most are, planning to be on campus in the fall, but, certainly figuring out the best way to do it safely. So as we kind of go along, more and more colleges are thinking about what fall will look like. I think one of the takeaways we got from the webinar, which we'll talk about later, but one of the panelists shared that really for this past spring, when this all started, the goal of colleges were to keep students safe, right? And so that was their primary concern was safety. So that, the rapid campus closures or the rapid move to online, it was all done very quickly. And so now with more time to plan ahead for the fall, certainly colleges want to be in person, but they are, making all contingency plans for sure.
Right. And is there a, from what we're hearing so far from the colleges that are planning on welcoming students to their campus in the fall, you mentioned a few different options. Is there a more popular option so far for a mode for colleges to be able to do that you've noticed?
So it's kind of all over the board in terms of, so I wouldn't say there is a necessarily a more popular option. I would say the most popular would be on campus for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think one that is sticking out in my mind, I don't know if it's necessarily the most popular, but would be to think about, traditionally students are taking 5 classes a semester over the course of 14 weeks, maybe tightening those semesters to shorter 7-week terms, and then only taking 2 or 3 courses per term. And so what that does is it allows you to, if the classes do need to be delivered virtually, you're only juggling 2 or 3 classes versus 5. Sure. And it allows colleges, let's say they had to be closed for the first quarter of fall, or they had to be, when I say closed, I mean virtual, they could then welcome students back the second half and not really disrupt that learning. Kind of another big or another uh, piece of news that came down last week was had to do with really a reassessment of testing policy. So on Wednesday of last week, NACAC, which is the National Association for College Admission Counseling, professional organization, they you know, they expressed some concerns about testing companies' proposals for at-home administration of the ACT and ACT later this year, as well as some of the revamped AP advanced placement exams that high school students will take online in May. You know, these tests traditionally are allowed to be are offered in person, certainly. And so, you know, I think that the kind of the main concern from NACAC standpoint is what does this mean from an equality standpoint, as well as a testing fair practices standpoint. And, you know, really, if all of these tests are being moved online, you know, does everyone have the same access to take these? Not only access to a computer, but also, you know, an environment where they could, it could be quiet. Again, you know, on the SAT side, you know, the College Board is committed to making sure that they're working with folks from across socioeconomic backgrounds. But just something to keep an eye on, I would say, for our families as they are thinking about and looking at both those ACT and SAT tests and what that might look like from a virtual standpoint.
The other side to that is some colleges and some college systems, state university systems, are switching to a test optional platform. Is that something that they are suggesting colleges do or urging colleges to adopt?
It's definitely on the table for you know, and the move to test optional has, you know, it's been around for a number of years now. Some schools have already announced that they are test optional even before this whole COVID-19 situation. But I think it certainly has, you know, it certainly ramped the conversation back up. And, you know, so I think that you may see more and more colleges announce that they are going to be test optional. Yeah. And then the last big, there were a lot of developments last week. So I won't say the last big one, but the last big one I thought we would share is that we are hearing from more and more colleges that they are waiving or reducing their deposit. If the schools that you're still balancing have pushed out their deadlines and so you still haven't committed yet, I would just check to see if it's been reduced or even waived. And, you know, just so you're following all that, but I'm sure that's been communicated pretty well. So just another way that we are seeing colleges kind of adapt to this, because, you know, I think they're doing it for a couple of reasons. Number one, we know that, finances can be a bit of a concern for parents and families right now. But also I think, you know, from the college's standpoint, you know, potentially reducing or waiving that allows more students to, I guess, you know, kind of commit to the university and make that decision. But, you know, as we always say, in most cases, the admission deposit is just a small fraction of what your total cost is going to be. So, you know, we always encourage families that, you know, to think about financing, think about the 2-year or 4-year commitment, whatever that might be, because in most cases, even the normal admission deposit would be, you know, a fraction of total cost.
We're going to start a new segment now where we ask.
Episode 2, new segment.
we're going to ask listeners or viewers, however you're ingesting this information, to send us questions. And so you can send us questions, whether it's for the podcast or whether it's not for the podcast, to collegeplanning@mifa.org. And so since we're going to be talking about financial aid appeals today, I thought we would read some questions that we received over the past week or so regarding appealing financial aid awards. So we have one here from a woman who is a mother of a high school senior. And she says, we as a family have it down to one private college, narrowed that list right down to one. And we plan to put a deposit down by May 1st. Our first appeal was requested due to our family's financial situation changing due to a reduction in income, unfortunately, fairly common at this time. They increased the grant money, which is good. As we said, grants and scholarships, the best kind of financial aid. It's free money. It does not have to be repaid. It's gift aid. And our second appeal, so they appealed twice. In a letter written by our daughter, they also increased the grant money again. But they changed our daughter's federal subsidized and unsubsidized loans. They were $3,500 for the subsidized and $2,000 for the unsubsidized. Now they're $1,758 for the subsidized and $3,742 for the unsubsidized. So basically that is a reduction in the amount of the subsidized loan. And the subsidized loan is the more attractive of the two because there's no interest being added on that loan while the loan is in deferment and the student's not making payments on the loan. There's no interest being added, so that balance is staying the same. Whereas on an unsubsidized loan, there is interest being added to that amount. So they got more grant money on the one hand, but on the other hand, they got an increased unsubsidized amount versus a subsidized amount. So they were curious as to why that happened. So I don't know if, Jonathan, you want to talk about why that may be and what the reason for that is.
Yeah. So, you know, I think first off, it's great that the family was able to reach back out and the school was able to provide some additional financial support in the way of grant money. That's huge. But in terms of the change to the loan amounts, so in the direct loan program, which is the loan program that's available to students, students are able to borrow a maximum amount every year. And for freshman year or their first year, for most students, it's $5,500. There are some cases where you can get a little more, but we won't get into that because it's different situations. But the traditional, and in this family, they had a total of $5,500 in that first financial aid offer. It was the $3,500 in the subsidized and the $2,000 in the unsubsidized. Basically what happened was because they got more grant money, their financial aid eligibility from a need-based standpoint was reduced at that particular college. There's a standard formula that every college uses. It's going to look a little bit different. Although the formula is standard, the inputs are going to be different because each school has a different cost. So the cost of attendance is going to vary. But basically what happened with this family was because they got more money, more scholarship money, it forced a change. And so that direct loan subsidized portion that was $3,500, more of it moved over to an unsubsidized portion because the unsubsidized direct loan is a non-need-based loan. So the reason that it happened, and I guess the short answer is that, it's a standard formula that colleges need to abide by. For this particular family, they now have more unsubsidized loan money, which of the two is the less favorable one. Mm-hmm. But the reason it happened was because they got more grant money.
A little bit of give and take there, but I think on balance, probably a net positive for the family.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
Now, the next question that we have is very simple. And it's just somebody saying that they have twins going to college, which even in the best of times is going to be rough sometimes. It's going to be rougher than having one child in. Mm-hmm. And they have unfortunately experienced a job loss as well. So that is very unfortunate and certainly sympathies to that parent. And they want to know how to appeal and what their options are to pay. So as this is a more general question, why don't we branch into our main topic of appealing? Now, recently MIFA held an online panel to discuss appeals, and we had as our guest financial aid directors Gail Holt at Amherst College, Kevin DeRossi, at Salem State University. Iris Gudis at Dean College, and Melissa Metcalf from Boston College. So what were your key takeaways? I know you watched the second night and I watched the first night.
So, but kind of my, you know, the big takeaways that I got was really the, I guess the first would be the mechanics of an appeal, for lack of better words. And so, you know, the panelists spoke very well about, you know, how they're going to differ from school to school, how some schools will have a form, how others, it will, might be just more of a letter that you would send in. There's also, you know, when it comes to the mechanics, I think a little bit more about, the panel spoke about how they're bound by federal formulas sometimes when it comes to awarding funds and maybe increasing awards. I know we have a clip of Melissa talking about some of those mechanics. You know, she's at Boston College, so I think you can take a listen here.
We all were required to use 2018 information for the initial award, but at Boston College, when it comes to an income appeal, what we do is project current year. So we would be looking at current 2020 information, you know, what's happening right now. And we would do so first, I would recommend people contact your financial aid counselor, either in writing or by phone. We have an appeal form we would ask them to then fill out, providing projected figures. What have they earned up till now, and what do they project to earn or receive in income from now until the end of the year, when we would ask them to provide documentation to support those figures. So that's generally how we would do an income appeal. But of course, there are some, you know, really unheard of situations happening right now. So, you know, we're willing to adjust with each family's situation, but every school is going to be doing this differently, I think.
So I think one thing that really jumped out at me from that is something that I didn't really think about very often. It's something you mentioned. It's something that, if it's not on my mind, it's probably not on a lot of parents' mind either, that colleges really do have procedures and regulations that they are bound by. So I think a lot of times parents and you know, myself even, not knowing what goes on behind the scenes, you know that there's some kind of consideration they're giving, but you might not be fully appreciative of some of the considerations that colleges are bound by, especially ones that do only merit, I'm sorry, only need-based aid and versus merit-based aid, where it's sort of maybe a little bit easier to give out merit-based aid, you know, jump through as many regulatory hoops as they do to increase need-based aid. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think it's you know, it's certainly good to know, and it's good to understand kind of how it's handled from college to college. You know, another takeaway that I thought was really good was, you know, when thinking about appeals, to really think about it within, you know, a four or a 2 year context. So, you know, there's certainly a lot of focus. There's laser focus on families right now on getting into the college, which you've done in making the decision. And there's hyper focus on the current financial state, which is why most people appeal, right? You know, you appeal because there's been a change in your financial circumstances that would be unforeseen. There's been a job loss. There's been unforeseen medical expenses. There's a lot of reasons that you might appeal for more money. And so certainly appeals take place in the now, but I think to think about them, and this, the panel did a good job, think about them in the context of the entire college decision, right? Or the entire college education. And, you know, even if you were able to appeal and get a little bit more money from a, you know, a need-based grant or a little bit more money in a merit-based grant, would that still be a sound financial decision to go to that college? And so I think that's, and as I mentioned, it makes total sense for us to focus on the now when it comes to the appeal. But, you know, as we talk about all the time at MIFA, you know, think about it in the larger context of the entire educational decision. And so, you know, ask yourself, even if I do appeal and get a little bit more money, is that still going to be enough
Right.
And am I still going to feel comfortable? Is it still a sound financial decision to go to that college?
Well, also, too, I mean, I think a couple of folks mentioned on that panel, one-year grants, right? Yep. An increase in one-year grant. So it is a good idea for parents if they do see an increase in whether it's a need-based grant or merit-based scholarship to ask about the likelihood that this is going to be extended yep. from year to year. So that was interesting. I think that's right on. The other thing that I was thinking of too that really interested me and it brought me back to a little bit of what we talked about in our first podcast when we were hearing from families of, mm-hmm. you know, sort of what we'd be hearing in any year, right? They still have a right. college decision to make and they're not really focusing on the COVID-19 outbreak. Well, colleges would still be managing appeals at this point, mm-hmm. in a, right? So they'd be managing yep. appeals on their incoming students mm-hmm. and on their existing students, right? Because students who are in college now, whether they're freshmen or sophomores or juniors or seniors, also have changes that yep. they're dealing with.
For sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. And also need to go back to the financial aid office. And it's always a good idea, even if you're a current student, if circumstances change, to keep in touch with your financial aid office. And I think we do have a clip of Kevin DeRossi from Salem State talking about that. So why don't we take a listen to that?
Right now, what we've done at Salem State is we've kind of broken up our appeals into three categories, pre-COVID, current COVID, and incoming in fall. Right now, we've shifted our focus to work specifically with students that are currently enrolled and being impacted by COVID in this current semester. So we've we've kind of pushed a little bit to the side incoming and fall appeals. And our primary focus right now is just working on our currently enrolled students who are experiencing financial hardships and difficulties in this current semester to process their appeals as quickly as possible and hopefully be able to, you know, get some additional financial support for them.
Right. So good to hear that from Kevin. And one thing that we haven't really talked about too much that I do want to emphasize right now mm-hmm. is how important documentation is. And mm-hmm. it's been mentioned a lot in that webinar. Do you want to talk about it? As somebody who's worked in a financial aid office,
yes.
mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How important is documentation to this process?
Yeah, you know, it's a huge, I guess, is the that's my word I'm going to use. But yeah, it's very important. You know, I think
that's the word I was looking for.
I know. That's what you were looking for. I was like, let me tip of my tongue. So for a number of reasons, as you can imagine, you know, documentation is important for the school records, just to for to kind of have on file. So there, if there is any changes to financial aid and folks, you know, schools are constantly dealing with audits, especially when federal funds are involved. So just having that documentation of why changes were made. From an institutional standpoint, obviously documentation is important that if a school is increasing any merit money that they might have, again, just to have all of that in one place is important. And I mean, you know, as you can imagine, it helps the aid office get a clearer picture of really what is going on. So the more that you can provide from a documentation standpoint, the better that it will be, or the easier time the college will have to sit down and actually make a sound assessment of your financial situation. You know, when I was in, you know, when we would look at appeals, again, when I was working in aid office, certainly it wasn't during a pandemic. So, but we would ask sometimes for tax returns, both yep. the most current year and previous year. We might ask for any unemployment documentation that could be provided. We might also ask the family to put together just a kind of a simple family budget. And, you know, what, you know, your finances tell one story, but perhaps the budget tells a little bit more because aid offices are really limited in that initial data that they have in some cases. So, you know, the more that you can provide just the more clear picture folks will have. And I think from a consistency standpoint, and able to kind of look from year to year, if you did have to appeal in year two or year three, just having that documentation on file also helps to look back as well.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. Yeah, one thing also, just to sort of bring it back to general impressions, was how busy financial aid mm-hmm. offices are right now. Mm-hmm. So I know sometimes that's something that we hear from parents, that they have appealed and they are still waiting to hear back, and they're maybe understandably anxious to hear back from right. financial aid offices. But I believe the last figure I heard was some colleges are dealing with as much as a 20%, 22% increase deals. So this is something that they are working on, and it's something that, as you heard in that clip from Kevin, there is a structure in place to prioritize current students and then prospective students. So definitely something to keep in mind for parents who are understandably anxious here. So what would you say, we've sort of focused on the school side of it right now, but what would you say to parents who are looking to appeal?
So I think to parents who are looking to appeal, you know, a few things kind of come to mind. Number one, I would say start by looking at the college's website to see what information they're asking for, how they prefer appeals to come in. Try to follow those as close as you can by, you know, filling out the online form and sending it to the correct email address and kind of including all the documentation that the college asks for. So I think that, you know, starting with the college and see what they are requesting from an appeal side is kind of the first step. You know, another thing that I would say to students and families is that although appeals sometimes do result in increased financial aid, to be realistic about it. You know, from speaking with folks and, you know, at the colleges, you know, increases, if they do happen, especially on the grant and scholarship side, tend to be fairly modest, in generally speaking, unless there was something huge missing during the initial financial aid review, or if you had an extra zero on your income or something crazy. But you know what I mean? I think kind of being realistic with yourself and realistic in kind of some of those expectations when it comes to appealing is certainly very important. And then finally, you know, I would say to students and families that, you know, if you have submitted an appeal and you think you've done all the paperwork right and you are, you know, anxiously waiting and you are at that point where, you know, the results of the appeal could be the make or break decision point. Again, assuming your school has pushed out the decision to May 15th or June 1st or later. You know, if it's been some time, call it a week, week and a half, it could be worthwhile to reach back out. And just, you know, something simple, hey, submit an appeal. You know, we're really hoping that you were able to review. You know, we're anxiously waiting, you know, to hear before we make a decision. I think that, you know, as a lot of the panelists said, and as Jonathan said, April is normally the appeal season on the college campus and the financial aid office. And this year it's gone huge. I mean, it's so much busier. There's so much more to consider. And so, you know, a message won't hurt. Now, should you be calling and emailing every day? No. No, right. I wouldn't do that, but I would certainly, it's worthwhile, you know, kind of reaching back out, just checking in. So yeah, that's what I would say to families.
And when you're thinking about sort of red flag items that you say, definitely appeal this, you're looking at what type of things? Job loss?
Yep. Job loss, definitely changes in income. You know, we know a lot of folks are dealing with reduction in salary based on COVID-19. Mm-hmm. You know, I think another one would be an unexpected death, obviously, in the family, that could impact finances. You know, another one could be, you know, kind of unforeseen high medical expenses, which folks tend to usually know about ahead of time. But if there's something that wasn't initially considered, you know, certainly doing that. But those are kind of like the big ones from the financial standpoint. You know, something less utilized, but certainly something that we're hearing, and you and I were speaking before, is, you know, families do reach back out simply to, because they got more money at another school. And so, you know, a couple different schools of thought here, and a couple different ways that it will be handled at some colleges, but you can certainly appeal your financial aid offer if there haven't been major changes to your financial circumstances, and just like, hey, I'm appealing because this other university gave me more money. Sometimes it'll work, sometimes it won't. So I think that it's really a college by college.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of parents, when they use the word appeal, mean specifically that. You know, can you use another financial aid offer as leverage at your top choice school? I always tell them, you know, you can do what you want. You can, you know, yes, you can do that. As you say, it may or may not work. And I remember we had a big discussion with a lot of our ambassadors who work at college financial aid offices about how they handle it when parents do that. And no shock, it differed from school to school. Some schools said, what I would say is, oh, you got that great financial aid package from that college, you should go there. And some colleges will say, you know, well, I would look at it and see what I could do. So it really depends. I always tell parents, make sure you tell the school how much your child wants to go to that school. Explain it's the first choice school. You know, you've got this financial aid package from this other university. It would be great if you could do what you could do to try to match it. But also another great piece of advice that I got from one of our colleagues who worked in a financial aid office was financial aid offices, well, in her experience, they found it easier to meet a request, an actual concrete number request. So they always like to see if a family had a plan in place to pay the college cost. So they knew that they were going to get an asset from this family member. They were going to borrow this amount. They're going to use this amount in savings. What they just needed was that extra X amount of dollars from the college. So yeah, obviously, nothing is a guarantee, but that's an easier ask to a financial aid office than sort of just saying, what else can you do for me?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And that's a, you know, certainly a good insight from that, you know, from that individual. And, you know, I always like to say too, that the aid offices aren't in the business of taking money away from you, right? So if you appeal, the kind of the worst that will happen is it will obviously not be accepted, unless of course you appeal and your finances are way higher than what you initially you know what I mean, like if you appeal and you're like, actually I make, and it's like, well, no, like we, which would have been uncovered anyway, so it's like it's not, but again, that's so rare, you know, that almost, you know, I won't say never happens, but it very rarely happens. So yeah, I mean, the colleges are not in the business of taking money from school. So yeah, I think it will vary from school to school, and kind of how they handle that situation.
Well, financial aid offices are not in the business of taking money away from you is a great ending point for this episode. So unless you have anything else?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Well, that about does it for MIFA's Navigating the Course to College for this week. If you want to talk to us, please remember, you can visit www.mifa.org for tools and guidance on all aspects of college and career readiness. You can also call us at 1-800-449-MIFA. and email us. Once again, that's collegeplanning@mifa.org with any questions that you may have. If you like this podcast, please leave us a good review on Google. Other than that, good luck with all of your futures and stay well.